Supernatural, scene 36, take one. Marker.
Action.
Hello, my children.
The Crossroads contains explicit language and discussion. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
You son of a bitch.
Storm's coming. You boys, your daddy, you are smack in the middle of it.
Good morning, Vietnam!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our 2024 podcast season for Supernatural, The Crossroads. I'm your host, Thomas Cowley. Joined with me today is Ryan Denton.
Poop.
And Michael Flores.
Hello.
All right. Now, this has been a while. It's been a long time coming. Just a bit.
But a year.
It has been a bit since we did a previous normal episode. We've done a couple of RPG episodes over the last year, but we have not posted much free Crossroads content in quite some time. And there's a reason for that.
Yeah, nothing's free these days.
Crippling debt aside, this is our 10th year, believe it or not, 10th year of doing the Crossroads podcast, which is the longest relationship I've had outside of blood family.
You almost said bloodlines. I got scared.
No. Come on.
You know what, man? I don't think I've stuck with anything for 10 years.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Not a job, not a relationship.
That's wild. That's wild.
I've been pet, maybe. Yeah, a pet.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That doesn't count. That doesn't count, though. This is a hobby. Let's be honest. This is a hobby. This is a 10-year-long hobby.
I know. We've been at it for quite some time. But last year, we did not do quite as much. We had some more goofy RPG episodes, which we're still going to continue with those. Yeah. Those are not going away. But we've taken some time to kind of revamp and overhaul what we're doing. We have various shows planned for this year, which include our standard issue deep dives into specific aspects of episodes, specific episodes, sorting through showrunner stylistic choices and what makes them unique at that time within the show, what made Kripke Kripke, what made Gamble Gamble, and various others. We have talks about meta narratives. We have talks about Gamble's penchant for crafting compelling character-driven stories, which is something that we drool a bit too much perhaps on that, but that's what this episode is going to be. And we also have just general reboot, a minor reboot that will help us refocus the podcast moving forward. And we wanted to do this because for the first time, we're in a future in which there are no Supernatural episodes coming up. There is no spinoff. There is no type of production in the works right now. And while as sad as that might be, I do think if you've listened to us for a long time, you know that we're kind of okay with that for right now, because you need to let something, you need to miss it before it comes back.
If you love something,
you let it die.
You let it go. And if it comes back to you, then it belongs to you.
Oh.
If it doesn't, then it never was.
You know. Wow. So there you go. Poetic. Now, this does not mean that our podcast is changing format. It is still going to have the same vibe as Ryan's debut word this year of poop. Should let you know.
There'll still be background noise of Ryan sorting through his candy on his desk.
I'm doing it right now.
I'm trying not to say anything.
That's why I said it, because it's distracting.
You can fucking hear it.
How is it distracting? You can't hear it.
Yes, you can hear it.
No, yes, you absolutely can.
Stop.
You guys are full of shit.
You're full of candy.
He's all, you can't hear this. What are you guys talking about?
It sounds like maracas over there. Just shaking them.
Hold on.
Jesus Christ.
Well, we put on a quality product here, okay?
Quality product, sure. So it's clearly still going to be the same general mood of the show, but we are trying to put a little bit more focused attention and informed commentary on Supernatural as an IP, things that you guys came to us for in the original days, you know, getting way too nerdy and talking too much about narrative theory and, you know, diving into the filmatic aspects of the show, what makes it work beyond just it's fun and it's cool and it's well acted, the various different things that we've talked about over the years. Now, all of these things, again, are things that we've done before, but without episodes to really guide our coherent discussion towards the season as a whole and where the show's going as a whole, we are going to gravitate to a more formal thematic exploration by structuring episode content around long-time running themes.
So if you guys are wondering what that long list of words just meant, essentially, there's no episodes coming out, so correct, we got to make shit up. And that's exactly what we're doing, right?
And to have that kind of general theme, right now, we're going to be talking about Sarah Gamble's work. So we're talking about her abilities, the episodes she's written, and just go into our personal favorite episodes that she was the writer of. And this, of course, will lead into other discussions about her as a showrunner and what she brings to the table and her as just a creative force in both the show and even outside as she moved on to other projects over the years. Now, if you are new to The Crossroads, you can find all of our shows, past, present, and future, wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search Supernatural The Crossroads. However, our preferred feeds for helping us out the most with the show is, of course, Apple Podcast and Spotify because of the reviews and the rating features. If you guys do like the content, or if you don't even, leave us a review. Engagement's important, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you don't, give it 5 stars, but say you didn't like it. So at least we get five stars. And then we'll read the comment and we'll address it. But at least you gave us 5 stars. That's really what we're worried about.
I mean, this is based on the American political system, so it's all, you know.
Right, right, of course.
Whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
So in this episode, as we were saying, it will serve as kind of an entry point to Gamble's work on Supernatural and let us get into deeper discussions of her abilities as a writer and then later a showrunner. Now, we've done something like this before with our Patreon discussion. For those who have been patrons, thank you very much. And you'll know that we've talked about some of this stuff before, where we tried to make sense of her general story direction and sought to understand the writing room decisions that came about during her tenure as showrunner. But that, of course, had its own pitfalls due to the fact that simply she wasn't given a full run as a showrunner. She was removed after 2 seasons. I think a tragedy that Supernatural really did suffer from, not taken away from Jeremy Carver, her immediate predecessor, but the fact that she only got kind of like a half story told, knowing her capabilities, especially knowing that she would go on to do other shows with much acclaim, including Netflix's You, which, I mean, if you haven't seen that yet, especially the most recent season 4, dear God, what an amazing show. Haunting. And it's, you see how she's just matured as a creative, as a writer. And it's something that I would have loved to see come to life with this show. But we're going to talk here specifically about our feelings about her, that she was this extraordinary talent, had a deep understanding of the world she was a part of, and what we personally chose as favorite episodes for us. Now, we talked about this a bit off air. Did we want to number these, you know, 1 through 5?
I'm kind of against that. And the reason being is, like, it was so difficult just for me to choose 5 that these 5 are good. And I just don't know if I could rank them. Like, it'd be hard. I think. I don't know. It's just
me. Yeah.
If you want, we can pull back from the ranking, because what I wanted to do with this discussion anyways was I wanted it to be less like an evaluation.
And more like just fluid.
And more of a discussion on why it worked for you.
Okay. Yeah. Because, like, I feel like with this one, it's so subjective, because I know there'll be at least 1 or 2 on all 3 of our lists that are different. And, like, for particular reasons. Like, one of mine is kind of goofy, and I guarantee it's probably not on your guys' list, but I enjoyed the episode and it made me laugh.
And Plucky's Penny Whistle.
Plucky's Penny Whistle sounds way worse.
She didn't write that.
I know she didn't. I was like, that's not on the list.
I wish it was, though. I wish I know
you would have picked
just
it.
Just to annoy Thomas.
Just to fuck Thomas, yeah. But I definitely...
You know, I didn't know that would eventually not be my least liked episode. Oh, yeah. That's as time went on. Yeah.
As time swiffered on, that got lower down your list. Huh? I don't really...
Plinko machine of life.
It was really difficult, like, even just to pick 5 that I thought were worthy of me saying they're my favorite. It'd be very little difficult to, like, to definitely rank them. So maybe just go. Yeah, and just kind of pick them, you know?
I think it is kind of tough. Plus, we've done a lot of ranking over the years.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
So I think this will just kind of be more of a, like you were saying, a free form discussion about certain episodes, why they worked for us, what really stood out.
Yeah.
And just kind of get into it from that perspective.
I like that.
Now, Sarah Gamble, we've talked a lot. Obviously, our favorite two, and I think I'm speaking for the room here, people behind the wheel when it came to Supernatural was naturally Eric Kripke, followed very closely by Sarah Gamble. And when you look at some of the stuff that she championed, that she wrote into the story, being essentially his number two and them working together and bringing those ideas to the table of things that he hadn't thought of or didn't feel would work until she portrayed them in a way that made it exciting as an idea.
Yeah.
She kind of had a deep understanding of not only the writing process and what it takes to make a captivating episode of television, but she might be a stronger writer than Eric Kripke himself. And that's not a, you know, that's a tough thing to say,
kind of saying something, yeah,
in some respects, for us at least here. And because we can agree, I think, most of the fandom that seasons 1 through 5 are the best written of the entire run of the show, which is Kripke's time on it. However, show running and writing the episode to episode elements are vastly different things and require different skill sets. Yes, the showrunner is the head writer and are in charge of the overall story, yeah, of guiding this ship from, you know, one point to the other and not hitting an iceberg and crashing it under the waves. But you still have a different element when it comes to just how is this one 42 plus minute moment of time going to convey all these ideas, move us from point A to B, and act as steps along the way. And that's something that I think she really, really did excel at. And so we're also going to talk a little bit about how, unfortunately, like I said earlier, we'll never really be able to evaluate her overall vision when it came to what she wanted to do as a showrunner due to executives and politics behind the scenes and
idiots,
producers that were around and making decisions that would later have even greater ramifications that could not be seen at that time.
Don't.
But, you know, time makes fools of us all. So with that, I think we get into it a bit now.
Okay.
So what better way than to start than to tackle our top 5 episodes, we thought. Now, upon a quick examination of her work, the general consensus is that she was a writer that tends to veer into really complex areas of character development. She goes into things that I think a lot of other writers, not just on Supernatural, but in general, kind of avoid. There's a lot, especially today. She is head and shoulders above many people today because today seems to be a lot of plot first, character is a what? And it's not even show running, so I can't even put that as third with a lot of shows today. They just kind of lead us from point to point, and unfortunately, a lot of poor quality shows, soapbox to soapbox. Whereas she was, I think, a master of having the characters, the actions they take, feel true to who they are, reveal elements of who they are by their actions, and having all of that move, like I said, these pieces across the board, mm-hmm, in a compelling way that, mm-hmm, didn't feel completely out of left field, out of an attempt, as Game of Thrones, I blame, would push of trying to shock the audience.
Yeah, you mentioned that she wants to show us, and that's something that I can definitely appreciate about Gamble's work, because she has a bit of a philosophical flair, that's what I would call it, to her craft, because rather than telling us why people do what they do, which is a problem with a lot of modern day writing, she chooses to examine the decisions made by posing rhetorical questions within the narrative itself. She's guided by a sense of curiosity and how the actual experience itself shapes the individual and their worldviews. When you really start taking a look at every single episode she writes, look at the very first one, Faith.
Mm. Yeah.
Perfect example. Dissecting the human condition. and the ideas of determinism versus free will, sacrifice, identity.
Well, and I think that what she does, what I really like about what she does is that she uses the experiences to change the worldview of the characters. And that's something that happens in real life. The things that happen to you, that you experience and survive and go through, affect how you look at the world. And it's the only way to get people to change their opinions on things, too.
Just so you know, that's not the first.
That's not her what's first. The first one she wrote?
It's on my list, and I'm going to, I'll just...
Yeah. Why did I think Faith was her
I'll go first if you'd like.
I think it's second.
Oh, the first one is the,
Dead in the Water.
Yeah, that one's good.
And that's on my list. So I went through and I kind of looked at all the episodes and there were three that immediately stood out. And this was one of them. Because this is literally season one, episode three. And you go, and we've talked about this numerous times about how the first couple seasons of Supernatural are just bathed in classic horror elements, right? Where you could watch this and the first season just makes you almost shit your pants some moments. There is a scene that I guarantee when she wrote this episode, and it's the scene where they're in the cabin and it's like darkly lit in Dead in the Water, right? And it's just the fucking creepiest scene. And I chose this episode because now she wrote this with Rael Tucker, who wrote ton of really good episode, but this one is just, there's something about this episode for me. There's so many elements of just classic horror, that black water in the sink, just the kid's face coming out of the, like, dude, this is just one of those episodes that if I were going to show someone Supernatural and really delve into what Supernatural was when it came out, this would be one of them. I think there's just so many creepy, like, elements of just the kid's voice, like just everything that was put into this episode is why this made my list.
It created a mood, and in creating a mood, or by creating a mood, you kind of create your own close-ended universe. Uh-huh. And that's something that the first season did really well, even though there was an overarching myth arc.
Sure.
Each episode
own thing.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing that we talk a lot when we talk about our favorite episodes or episodes that we would show someone to get the vibe of Supernatural, right? We talk about that a lot. Well, what episode would you show someone, you know, to get the vibe? This would definitely be on that list. And I think every episode in season one is one of those things where it's like you said, it's its own thing. It could be its own singular story because there is that overarching, like you said, but it's that singular story.
She also really likes human flaw.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because that's
a theme in my list.
Yeah. And it's not designed to make value judgments on an individual. It's simply there to explore a reality.
Right. So you talked about it earlier, like the moral dilemmas, right? The moral dilemmas of Supernatural is filled with moral dilemmas. And it's one of the largest themes in season 1 through 15, where you are constantly second guessing whether you're right or wrong. And it's something that for me, as someone who's not quite on the level of you guys as like filmmaking and just looking at stuff that way. Mm-hmm. For me, it's something that really hits home because you have that constant thought process of like, am I right or am I wrong? Right. Is this thought process that I have considered right or wrong? And it's a theme in my list of five. There's a couple episodes where you're like, are the brothers right? Like what is right and wrong? And I think she does an immaculate job of showing you that. And
the reality of life is that none of us are 100% perfect.
Nope.
We all make poor decisions at times. And the biggest problem with a lot of TV shows in the mid 2000s, they were really about it with shows like The Shield and Nip Tuck.
Oh, Battlestar Galactica.
Battlestar Galactica, 24, yep. Prison Break, showing like the actual reality of human behavior, yep, and humanizing. The decisions we make. They're not always the best decisions, but they are human decisions,
sure.
And they're our decisions,
yep.
Which shows free will. So that's in a lot of ways, the use of her moral dilemmas is designed to exemplify the aspects of free will.
Sure.
because people who are free will agents make decisions, and sometimes those decisions aren't ideal. And they never pulled back with Sam and Dean.
Nope.
Even throughout the 15 seasons, let's go past Gamble, even though I believe she's the one that really started this, but at least they carried it on. They never pulled back from making Sam and Dean do things human. That might not be great.
Questionable.
They're questionable decisions.
And I think that's what humanizes the characters. And I think with this episode, you know, it's the third episode of a brand new show on season one. And you're doing things like that.
You're already going into moral ambiguity. Yeah.
Like, dude, like, come on, man. Like, name a show, another show that's done that, you know, in forever. I mean, that's why this one made the list. I don't know if it's on your guys' list, but this one for me, just overall creepy, the writing, just the I'm telling you, the scene where they're in the house and it's just the way it's lit, just everything about that entire episode is just quintessential supernatural. And this one had to make my list because it stuck with me even when I watched it the first time. I was like, what the fuck?
I think that's one of the things that I used to determine my list was which ones do I still think about? Mm-hmm. When I think of Supernatural, what scenes, what elements, what moments still come back to life for me? And one of the ones that embodies the show as a whole and her ability as a writer that I love just so much is season one, episode 12, Faith. We talked about it, so I'm just going to get into it.
So I'm gonna join you on this one because it's on my list too as well. Yeah.
Now this credit where credit's due was also written by Rael Tucker.
Right.
They were partners in the beginning until she kind of started being able to do her own and same with him. But
so she wrote two episodes with Rael Tucker?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Damn. Yep.
Maybe they railed?
Oh.
I couldn't help myself. I had to.
They took scissor breaks.
So Thomas, this one's on my list as well.
Sarah Gamble was listening to this. She's all, these guys are good. And then when we said that, she's all, like, these are gross.
So I just want everyone else at home to know that this was on Mike's list too as well, but Mike decided to get bougie with his list.
Stop.
And he decided to take it off. So I figured that we would all have this one and we could just kind of, you know, triple tag team this thing, but no, Mike had to be bougie and pick episodes.
It's just like when we did the ranking of the demons and I picked that demon from the well.
Whatever. No one would remember.
Oh man.
You're like, God, oh yeah, you know.
That was such a horseshit.
Yeah, well, it was a horseshit pick, dude.
It's a hipster
pick. That's what I said.
Exactly. It's a horseshit pick and it's like.
I stand by it.
It's like
you would. What it
it's
looks
kind
like.
Of.
It's awesome.
It's kind of like when you make up rules for games and we can't figure that.
Stop it. This is a new season, which means we pretend that stuff doesn't.
Oh, is that what it is? Oh, okay.
We're going to the dab school of writing.
This is a reboot. So
it's a soft reboot.
Soft reboot.
Yeah,
we're retconning some of that stuff.
All right.
Stupid.
Yeah. So this one is written with Rael Tucker, and she is also an exceptional writer. But what I love about Faith, not only is the opening just fucking iconic, like straight up memorable as fuck, between the song and the visuals and the elements of that, but it really is all about moral dilemmas.
Yep.
There is no, and it's one of the things she does so well, and I think it might be why she's one of my favorite writers, because I do like, which probably explains a lot, tragedy, and I like it when heroes fail. Because while it is nice to have heroes win and save the day and succeed,
failing is realistic.
It's realistic, and it makes you feel.
I win every day.
Oh yeah, okay.
It makes you feel more. It makes them more relatable. It makes them more human. And we start. I still remember, like, we start, and Dean is on a time clock. He's going to die.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's episode 12.
So that was one of the things about this episode that I put it on here, is because one of the things that Supernatural does so well, and it's so funny because we make fun of it now, 15 seasons past, but you could be on season 3 and they'd make you fear one of the brothers dying.
Yeah.
And we're, like you said, Thomas, this episode is season 1, episode 12. And they're like, guess what? Dean's going to die. And you're like, what the To this day, watching it, you're like, man, I know what happens, but damn, that's, I mean, like, you're still like, fuck, you know?
It's like, because the writing is multifaceted. There's so much there that it doesn't matter that we already know.
It's like watching Anakin land on Mustafar and you're like, fucking don't do it. Don't fucking do it. And but you know it's going to happen. And it's like, they are so good at that. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, to go 0 to 100, literally in episode 12, I'm like, hey, man, this character, well, the main character is going to die.
You know, a lot of shows, one thing I hear a lot today is plot armor, that lead characters have plot armor. So you can't really get invested. You know, they're not going to die because it's episode 4 of something. Right. But I think that's because a lot of writers, aren't very skilled in what used to be, you know, trial by fire and learning what made something compelling for an audience. Like you just said, Supernatural, I was constantly worried with how are they going to get out of this? How are they going to solve this? How is Dean getting out of hell or avoiding this deal? How is any of this going to happen? What's going to happen with Sam at the end of season 5?
Yep.
It was constantly there because she and other quality writers do a good job of framing the stakes in a way that is believable, but also giving you something to worry about that isn't just whether or not they die or survive this conflict. Dean is on death's door, but that's not what we're worried about. We are worried more about, in a way, his very soul. Right. Is he willing to go through this process, which at the time we don't really know what it is, but knowing now that it essentially takes someone else's life, how is he going to deal with that? How is he going to survive that? Or how is this, like we said earlier, going to change him?
Right.
It's about stakes in a way in which they will lose something, if not their life, that will forever change them, that you too are worried about. That is something that a lot of shows don't bother with. They just say, oh, and then there's a fight scene.
Right.
Well, you know, for example of a show that kind of dropped the ball and then kicked it down a flight of stairs, Ahsoka. Characters die in the very first, or not die, but get wounded in the very first episode. And I'm like, well, this is horse shit because there's no way.
I was wounded in the very first episode.
I was too. Wounded. We all were. But there's no way that this is going to have any lasting impact because there's no stakes been built to have any. And it's too early for anything serious to, like, this level to occur. So you're kind of just roll your eyes at the entire concept. Meanwhile, here, 12 episodes in, not only is it a compelling situation, but it has a resolution that isn't great.
No, it's not a win.
By stopping evil, he condemns people to die. Like, that's fucking brilliant.
Talk about a moral dilemma.
Yeah, it's literally the same thing where it's like, well, I can kill 100 to save 1 million. And it's that moral dilemma of like, well, if I kill 100, I save 1 million people. Mm-hmm. But if I don't kill those 100 people, 1 million people will die. And it's this constant like sacrifice. Right. And to do that in, again, I know we talk about this a lot, but in episode 12 of a show that's brand new, mm-hmm. and you hit us with a lose, essentially.
Yeah. That's what it is.
And it's like, well, okay, this is incredibly relatable because one of the things that I love about these early episodes and even these episodes that Sarah Gamble writes is that not only do they lose, because in most of these, they lose in that she wrote. But they learn from the loss. Mm-hmm. And I think
it reveals more of who Dean is. Like, right? He's not willing to take the life of an innocent person to extend his own. And not necessarily that Sam's all about it, but he's got a different perspective on some of it.
Yeah.
And if people are, you know, everyone dies, it's natural. If you have the power to control that, because that poses a moral question to you as well. If you can save someone you love, but someone else out in the world dies, would you press the button? That's a philosophical question that's posed quite a lot. And most people are like, yeah, fuck it, I'm going to smash that button. But it's different when it's in front of your face. And you really have to confront that idea. And that's what I love about this episode, is that the monster is ancillary. It is an end, means to an end. It's no different than like a gun or a knife. It's just a weapon.
He's just a symbol.
it's a human people making decisions behind the scenes.
He's just simply, if you really wanted to take a look at the healer himself, he's simply just a symbolic figure that represents all of these other things. The idea, he's the embodiment of what everyone will feel.
Right.
The effect of faith, redemption, transcendence. Just this whole, because I'll just add to it, Thomas, because this is actually on my list.
Oh, it is on your list.
Yeah. The biggest thing for me is the fate versus free will. You have Layla who embodies, is that her name? Layla?
Yeah, I think so.
She embodies like, or I should say epitomizes the, like the struggle between fate and free will and the acceptance of one's fate, which at this point in the series, we're starting to understand still that this is what the show is really about.
Right.
The notions of free will versus determinism, or you could even say the contrasting element, which is determinism. It's something that they were wrestling with, this idea, narratively speaking, since the very conception of the show. But as viewers, we weren't conditioned yet to understand what this show was going to eventually be about, which at its core, if you really had to streamline it down to one philosophical theme, it is free will.
Yeah.
Absolutely is free will. And this is just more of that brick lane getting to that bigger picture. Right. And the fact that we see Sarah Gamble back in day one was a major part of laying down that philosophical framework. I mean, credit is due where credit is due.
Yeah. I think it's wild that we had 15 seasons of Supernatural, and to go back all the way back to season one, episode 12 or three or whatever it is, and you see the same theme from season one to season 15. And I guarantee, you know, Kripke had an idea of where the show was going to go in five seasons, but there's no way he knew that. So to see the same themes over a span of that long is wild when you know that season one, they had no idea that it was going to go like that.
It just shows you that at least the later writers fully appreciated the narrative ingredients that were literally gifted to them.
Yeah, gifted. Mm-hmm. I think with this episode, and this is by the way, the first Reaper appearance as well.
Yeah.
And
before they got a makeover.
Before they got a make a dude, that is some creepy looking shit in this episode. And I think like for me, this jumped on my list for a couple different reasons. I think you and I talked about it, Thomas, earlier, but the first real, oh shit, how are they going to get out of this? You know, within 5 minutes, Dean's going to die. Like what? Mm-hmm. Like, whoa. Okay. How, you know, like, and in these, and really felt like, okay, this is, he's going to die. Like if they don't figure this out, he's going to die. And then they put that, okay, well we can save Dean, but that person's going to die and you have to watch them die. And it's like, you find out so much about Sam and Dean in this episode, just based on that alone, that you're like, whoa, okay, like, sure, you could save your brother, but are you willing to sacrifice that person there to save your brother? And then who knows what the fuck's going to happen to your brother because of that bad juju, right? And it's very, very, that moral dilemma of, can I sacrifice someone else to save my loved one? You know, when that person has no idea.
It's such a well thought out episode. Because when you take those things, those elements you were talking about, you can also pair it up with the idea of belief and the power of belief.
Sure.
And the way that belief can be used in such a dangerous way to shape our own human behavior. You have people willingly killing others so they can survive, using the power of belief to misguide and misdirect people. So there is just so much.
There's a lot to unpack.
Value that. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot to unpack in this episode. And I think it's really, really difficult to unpack at all because it is so complex in a, you know, 12th episode of a season one,
45 minutes.
And
dude, there's full seasons of television today that don't cross that amount of,
it's
content.
Wild, dude.
45 minutes in an episode of early Supernatural is like six episodes in today's streaming world.
It really fucking is, dude.
It's so true.
It's so sad for today's status.
This was a discussion, this is all in the same ballpark here.
Yeah.
So my son has been exposed to new or older television shows lately.
New because good.
Yeah, older TV shows. And
you want to show him stuff that you like. Sure.
No, not really. He hates TV. Doesn't want to watch it ever.
Oh,
doesn't okay. like it. Doesn't like streaming. Doesn't like any of it. He only likes, you know, YouTube videos. So I asked him
why. Short form media.
And to make it simple, or let me simplify it down. Basically, he just finds it boring. So I'm like, well, let me show you other things and see what you think. So I started showing him shows from the late 90s, early 2000s okay. to mid 2000s. And he's in love with them. So we start talking about why. Like, why do they work?
Sure.
And it simply goes down to the reason that what we have now is a bunch of streaming, moody showrunners
yep.
that want to express this mood through meandering visuals that don't really ever coherently say anything. Mm-hmm. I just got done watching the new season of True Detective.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not terrible.
I haven't watched it yet.
The show could have been told in 3 episodes.
Yeah.
That's yeah. the problem. The show isn't bad.
Yeah.
Overall, but it meanders because they have to sell you the mood every episode. You don't need to sell us the mood every episode in a serial because
there.
You've already done it.
I think what's wild, and just to elaborate on this before we continue, I think it's wild that the best stories and the best visuals and the best overall feeling of watching something epic now is in anime. If you start looking at the writing and things from anime, you're like,
well, it's also because Japan's not confining itself to the same current social political ideas that are
no,
constraining Western media.
I think I knew one of these episodes would be on all 3 of our lists. And so this one doesn't surprise me that it's on here. And I'll tell you what, man, like if I did have to rank them, that I don't, this would be teetering at number one for sure.
Why don't you take us to your second one then?
Okay. Well, this one I know is on Thomas's list. So let's just talk about season 2, episode 17, Heart.
Oh, you bastard.
So this episode would be absolutely between this and Faith would be number one. And I think this is quite possibly the most heartbreaking and one of the most tragic episodes in Supernatural. The ending of this episode, and don't you fuckers lie, I know this broke you guys.
Oh, I cry.
Yeah. It is to this day one of the most real and hard-hitting endings of an episode.
Dude, just thinking about it right now, I'm like, oh, Jesus.
Dude, I have such a hard time with this episode at the end because it shows Sam and Dean at their most vulnerable. And
yeah.
knowing that the girl... ignorance is bliss. You know, she has no idea what she's done. And the only way to help her, and they realize this, is to kill her.
Well, and she knows, and she asks
for
the help at the end.
And like, dude, like.
And that's, again, showing Sarah Gamble's ability to craft moral dilemma you have someone who has no idea what they're doing.
Yeah.
And, do you kill this person?
Yeah. Are they guilty?
Yeah.
Are they guilty?
It's the
posing those questions.
It's the age old ignorance is bliss. You know, it's the age old. Well, she finally realized what she's done, and talk about a mature person to say, well, the only way you can stop me is this.
See, I wouldn't do that. I'd be like, whatever, I'm out. I would run.
Like, dude.
But it's what I also love, though.
I got my pussy poked. I'm out.
Whoa. All right. That is.
Well, on that line, sadly,
that's not going to be a drop either.
It should be. No? You know, you have plenty of drops of Thomas and I. We need
saying horrific things.
Yeah, come on.
Nah,
that's bullshit.
No, but the thing is,
I'm gonna start show running this show.
This is a reboot.
One of the other elements, though, that makes this so gut wrenching is that this is the first time that Sam falls in love with somebody after Jess.
Yeah.
Oh. It is the first time he lets himself, his guard down.
Yep.
It's one of the things that I also feel like sadly is being lost in today's completely censored, safe, sterile, neutered environment, in that the passion that Madison and Sam have and it building to it, and then they finally have that night together. Like, as an audience member who's been with this character, they boned for a year and a half, more than a year and a half at this point. Like, to have those emotional moments that you can relate to when you had somebody that you were into for the longest time.
To that.
Right, unless you're celibate like half the fucking cast here, you know. It's just extra painful because it's one of those things that I remember from a writing class of my own, which is like, find the worst thing you can do to them and then to your characters and then do that. And it's making the person he's recently fallen in love with, when he's finally let his guard down, be the person he has to kill.
Ugh.
Fuck you. That's one of those things that bravo to her, because I know
Black Widows do it all the time. Just saying.
I know, like,
the insect world is filled with those scenarios.
You know, what little writing I've done compared to all these professionals, like, it is so hard when you really like a character that you've created, that you really have either a real life inspiration for, or a part of you is in them, or more often than not, both. And to do something like that, because it's not just Madison's story is tragic, but Sam's the one who feels that pain forever now. Dude, and to know that you have to do that to them, that's so fucking hard to do.
It's rough. Like, this theme has been lately for me in a lot of things that I've been watching, the whole, like, this thing that I love, I have to set free and, like, take care of, or because no one else can. Is such a fucking theme. Like, I was watching a show recently where a character died and Kate was reanimated, and the people that he taught have to kill him. And it's like, dude, how heart-wrenching and gut-wrenching is, hell, there's the person that taught me everything I know. Now I have to kill them.
Well, let's add another layer to this, which is why it's one of my favorite episodes, is that Sam thinks he might be a monster,
right?
That he knows there's some dark secret that their father was hiding from him. So he relates to Madison even more so. It's what helps them connect. It's what allows them to have that moment. And it's what makes it hurt more. And it's also a preview on top of all of that. It's a preview of what Dean might have to do.
Foreshadowing.
Dude.
Yeah.
Fucking holy shit.
Now, one of the things that I want to know, right? If Gamble were sitting here and Kripke were sitting here, I would like to know that in season 2, episode 17, did they know where they were going with the story? Did he know? Because to foreshadow like that so hard about, okay, well, you know, Sam might be a monster and Dean might have to take him out. And when you start thinking about Michael and Lucifer and all these things that come full circle in season 5, like, did they fucking know? Did she know? Did she know something?
That's one of those things that, like, so no matter what, this is just my personal tinfoil hat. No matter what they say in interviews that they were like flying by the seat of their pants and they had no idea if they'd have another season, I'm like, there's no way you don't have some of this stuff thought of where you want to take it.
Yeah.
The amount of, like you said, it comes full circle. It fits perfectly. Season 2 lining up with season 5. Like, that doesn't just happen.
No.
That is effort planned in advance. Maybe they didn't know if they'd get to that point. But there's no way in my mind that they didn't think about this already. Not truthfully.
Yeah.
Whether or not it was Michael and Lucifer or Sam versus Dean just straight up as humans, some element of that had to be present.
Shit like that blows my mind, man. Whether it's writing or books or whatever, is taking an element from something so far away, you know, back and bringing it full circle is so mind boggling to me, because I have an idea of what it takes to write this story and then have something come full source, like, circle at the end. Is just, it blows my mind. And I'm like, that's why I want to ask him, you know, like, it's so crazy.
It's so incredibly well written. And we do have to give praise to the director, Kim Manners, the legendary director for Supernatural's inaugural run.
The episode's so fucking,
I mean, his ability to get those performances out of Jared and Jensen and even the actress who played Madison, like, it sounds incredibly corny, but the way they deliver certain lines still sticks in my brain. I can still hear the exact way Madison says, "You tried, I know you tried." And, like, her voice breaks, and God, God damn, dude. Like, the way it all came together, this is a story that had passion. This is somebody who knew these characters in and out and knew just how to twist the knife.
Mike, was this on your list?
No.
Too cool.
Too cool to put this one on his list, huh? How dare
you? There's not really a bunch of wrong answers here.
I know. I just like fucking with
Mike. But this one, this is one of those ones that when I first watched it, like, I knew the show was great.
Yeah.
I knew the show was great.
Yeah.
But this was one of the ones that when it came out, I knew this was going to be something important to me.
I remember when I first watched it, it was so different.
Yeah.
In a good way. Like, it was it from the character development to the characters showing the depth of the character. Because at this time, we still don't know if Dean's like a great guy. You know, we're still kind of on the fence, right?
Well, we know he's like a better guy now, right. But he might have to do a terrible thing.
Right. And so we're like, well, is he going to fucking do this? Like, you know, like, so it's really interesting when you look back at this episode and just see the differences in the characters and like how far they've come. And
well, and I think this is also a good example of what I was saying earlier, where you don't have to put your characters in moral peril to have stake and investment.
No,
and
I mean,
you can beat the shit out of them and damage them emotionally, scar them horrifically for life. You know, doesn't just have to be they're going to die now. And this is a great example of that. And again, as Mike said, dude, 42, 41 minutes. And it's better than entire seasons of TV.
It's so wild.
But just to go back just a bit to what you were saying, Ryan, when you mentioned the aspect of heart that you appreciated was that this idea that Sam had to contend with the idea that he could also be the monster.
Yeah.
Right. And the whole idea that Dean, the reason why he was crying is because, hey, this might be something that
I might have to do.
Yeah. But this is something that I didn't really take note of until we started preparing for this show, that this is all gamble, all of this. Because if you look at an episode that I have on my list, which is Fresh Blood, you have those notions as well embedded into the episode.
Remind me what that, the Fresh Blood.
That's the one with Gordon Walker.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
That we actually just covered on Patreon, the complete episode.
Yes.
So this episode was amazing. And rather than retreading on things that we just discussed a couple months back for Patreon, there's an aspect to doppelganger theory, which is something that goes into literature and narrative theory that we don't really talk about too much, but it was actually an idea that was put together by Carl Jung, which is a psychologist. He was a contemporary of Freud. And he talks about the idea, this aspect of psychology and the shadow person, and how the shadow person is this self-representation of the unconscious. And it represents the aspects of an individual's personality, including traits and desires that are repressed or denied. And the fact that you start seeing, when you go through Fresh Blood with a fine-tooth comb, you can start seeing how Gordon is a stand-in for what Sam can become. Mm-hmm. And when you start digging deeper into Jung's philosophy on the doppelganger theory and shadow, the shadow, you start seeing how Gamble is so well educated with literature that it's no wonder why she has become the greater writer to come out of Supernatural, because she does not hold back on anything. She will borrow anything that will help say what she wants in an episode. And by doing so, she creates all these connective elements in every episode. If you were to string together just her episodes, it's a coherent story. Just her episodes alone can make up its own complete season that is tied together through particular things that she only writes and philosophical ideas that she's the only person that truly embeds those ideas. Everyone else borrows those ideas superficially. She's the one that really digs in deep.
We talk about this often, and not just on this show, but on almost every show that we do. And that's the most interesting villain is the one that thinks they're doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, villains.
And all good villains are the ones that go, you know what? I'm doing the right thing. You may not see it now, but I am. And Fresh Blood is just like that. Gordon is trying to do what he thinks is the right thing. And if you really think about it, he wasn't wrong.
He wasn't wrong, and that, the you're absolutely right. That's a perfect, you know, way to dissect that scene further, because let's take that even further now down the road. So you have this aspect being developed, this idea of Gordon being something that Sam must confront.
Yep.
Gordon thinks he's doing the right thing. Sam continues down the path of drinking demon blood because he thinks he's doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And without even realizing, he's literally going down the same path that Gordon did.
Predicted.
And the thing is,
yeah, and Gordon predicted
and predicts it to the point where he does become the vessel for
he starts the apocalypse.
Yes, he start technically and then quickly ends it real fast. But the point is that Gordon wasn't wrong. And I think now that we, of course, we didn't know that at the time, right? When that episode came out. But now when we sit back and look at that, you look at this character who there's a parallel with Sam. Sam is going down the same fucking path and Sam thinks he's doing the right thing.
The roadmap is there.
It's there. And it's like, dude, you have to, like, for me, as I sit here, I could never write anything like this. It is so mind-boggling to me that someone like Gamble could write something like this that's so like showing the parallels of two characters and what they face together. And not to mention writing some of the lines that Gordon has in that episode. Like,
well, Sterling K. Brown is brilliant.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah.
That episode, I mean, we just did that one. So I remember that one pretty vividly. Man, it amazes me as I sit here and we talk about this and again, things that come full circle, right? That episode, like I said, Gordon wasn't wrong. And you look at it a completely different way now than you would when you first watched it.
Can't that also be categorized technically as a moral dilemma as well?
Yeah.
The fact that Gordon is not wrong.
Yeah. Dude, it is.
I mean, he even is killing to save the world from the apocalypse in his perspective.
Yep.
You know,
that's fucking crazy, dude.
So, Thomas, we are coming to the end of our time and we've only touched on two episodes, really. So let's just break this up. Let's close out the show and we can do a part two.
All right. Because
I do have
two. The next ones that I have. We need a proper amount of time to talk about.
Yeah, one of mine does.
We've only used two episodes from my list of five.
I did three because I jumped on the same one with Thomas.
But, yeah, we've done two of mine, two of Mike's, and three of...
Yeah.
So that's perfectly like almost halfway there.
Yeah, that's cool.
So we're going to put a pause on this for part two to get into the further discussion of our favorite Sarah Gamble episodes. Thank you all for listening. This is the start of a new season. As Mike says, we are rebooting the show. We are not dead and gone, at least not yet. They keep missing us.
Perhaps we should be, but...
But, you know, like a zombie or,
like,
you know...
season 15 of Supernatural.
We limp along. So with that, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time.
You little maggot. You are no longer a part of this story. Hey, ass butt.